outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
I'm Wayne Jacobson, and I want to welcome you back to the God Journey in our continuing 7-week series we're calling Redeeming Love, how Sarah and I found our way through her trauma to a renewed relationship beyond it. When Sarah was 4 years old, she faced a horror greater than her mind could bear, and so her brain tucked it away out of her consciousness. The resulting trauma, however, continued to express itself in dark thoughts and feelings that made no sense to her, and that she hid from everyone around her. Now it was time for those secrets to be unmasked, so they could be healed in God's grace and love.
And then she had switched therapists, as we mentioned. And then she came over one day to tell me something that was horrific for her. And located now we know where the trauma is. The trauma was not here, not me causing it. I became the target of it because trauma, as we said on the podcast earlier, it's stuff you feel in the present. Trauma is not a bad memory you have of something that happened to you. The trauma triggers, like, you have those emotions in the moment as if it is happening to you. And Sarah, not knowing there was something in her past, 64 years of living, not knowing something very dark was back there, put it the only place they could, which was on me. So she came over and just, man, in tears, just told me what they had discovered at a therapy session.
Yeah. And there was a couple, I don't even remember if it was the first or probably the second or the third one, and I don't even remember how it came out. But
well, the first was with your cousins.
Yeah, and a little bit by a little bit. I mean, the initial one was, and I don't understand, it was all about our inner child and adult brain and talking, and we did through that and seeing in our session, seeing that inner child, four-year-old child. And I guess it's kind of like it in talking to, I mean, I'm talking to my inner child inside, and she says, keep talking about that. And then images of what I had kind of seen not through the years, I mean, just that last few months or so, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but it was just a door and another door going to an office and to a closet with a couple cousins. And well, not even that knowing, I just kind of like, I didn't really like one of them and uncomfortable with another, and never knew why. And just like, why would I do that? I'm not a person that kind of holds grudges, and, you know, I'm with grandpa, and I see a picture of him, and I just shudder. And so then, yeah. And
I'll say a big part of it too was that talking about the inner child is a place in the brain where Sarah's frozen at her four-year-old deal. But, you know, how do you see yourself? And she said, I see myself as a horrible person. That's what the little child feels. Yep. Not something horrible happened to her, but she's horrible. Mm-hmm. And that's been when Sarah gets into a darker place in her life, that's where she retreats to. That's what causes the sorrow and the sadness. And I've never seen her as a horrible person. I mean, I'm endeared to this lady. Yeah. I think she's magnificent in so many ways. But that was a revelation to find that there's this core part of your identity that feels like you're horrible, that did feel like you're horrible.
Yeah, I mean, this little girl was laying on the ground, hands crossed, and she was just sobbing. And then, you know, we're working through, why is she horrible? Because she disappoints, and you just go on, and then... And so giving permission, you know, kind of like talking, I mean, you probably would be able to explain it better than me. Then I started, you know, little images. I don't know if you call them flash. I mean, just an image. It's just a few seconds. And then they kind of pop at different ones. And then in the session coming together, and then I was in with, you know, these cousins and, you know, just reality at your age four and not understanding and that you're being sexually molested and needing to be a good girl and
don't say anything to anybody.
Be quiet. And then that's about all I had at that point. And then each week and there's little other images, you know, it's just like, it's not like floodgates, but I mean, it's just like one comes out and then all of a sudden others start coming, and they're random and they're not in order. They're just, but then as time after time, things and events have opened up, some of these things are being put together. Well, that was like before this event, and I don't know if it's the inner child or if it's God's grace. The first initial one in the closet, each one's got more intense.
Well, we've been watching this over the last, what, say 3.5 weeks, 4 weeks?
Yeah.
That, I mean, she was already, when these started happening, we were already back together. We weren't, I mean, Sarah needed the apartment down there. We'll talk about that maybe at some point, just to be alone. She needed a lot of solitude. But I was looking at it like, there's something wrong with me, or she wouldn't be down there, kind of stuff. But we were in each other's lives again. So as Sarah's sharing this, I'm right there. I mean, she's sharing it with me. I'm right inside this story with her, and I'm honored that she considered me safe enough to be there with her. But we've watched this crazy thing. We don't know if it's all Jesus or brain or a combination of the two, but it seems to be out of the norm that the memories have just surfaced. It's like some part of her brain lets her in on something ugly that happened to her, a little bit of it. And then when she processes that and handles that, then it gives her a little bit more. And it gets darker. It gets, and then a little bit more. And we've been watching this now for 3.5, 4 weeks. And most of it doesn't happen in therapy sessions. It's not a therapist trying to get this stuff out of her. She went to bed last night and there was something that started to surface again that takes this story on further. But now Sarah has a story from her childhood. And I don't know that we're done yet. We don't have a clue. But she has a story from a childhood that explains so much of how she's processed life for the last 64 years. And if you'd asked Sarah a month and a half ago, were you ever molested as a child? She would say, of course not. No. Mm. But now very clearly by two different men, and possibly, I won't go into the details of all those things because they're horrible stories.
Yeah.
But these are memories that not only are very real to Sarah, those images have things now she can remember that she had amnesia about. Again, the body keeps the score. If you want to understand this process, it's amazing what the brain does when it shuts. At 4 years of age, she had something happen to her that was beyond her ability to process. So the brain just stuffed it away and hid it from her, hid it from me, hid it for our whole married life. And now God's decided the body's, I mean, part of it is the body. This, you can talk about this eruption that's been going on inside.
Yeah. Over the last, I'll probably say a year, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just, you look backwards. I mean, you're going forwards, but you look backwards and all these little different things. And the thing that you had told me when we had one of the conversations, I don't even remember, where you talked about that puzzle. piece, that puzzle just being dumped on the table and having all these little pieces and putting things together. And, you know, I kind of understood that, but now I'm kind of understanding that because my images are being put together. They're connected. Like there was a couple with my grandpa and one before and after, and then it escalated. And then grandpa was in this other situation with me, which made it, my therapist said, well, that totally changes everything because you have this man who is inviting other people. And so then, you know, another image of playing afterwards, that gets attached to this one. And so it's like I'm putting the time frame, I'm creating a story, re-changing my story or rewriting or
reimagining.
Yeah.
And really seeing your story very differently, the whole of it.
And then, you know, each step, it was just like a couple cousins and then grandpa with that. And then it's in another room and then it's more intense to another room. And then it's intense to another room and then another person. And then it's a peeping, this person becomes like a peeping Tom at our house. And, you know, and then now it's just last night and I'm older. A couple years older, and the experience last night, gosh, if it gets hold, I don't guess, oh, it's horrible, more worse than this, but it was same person, but forceful, and was drunk, and it was a different tone, and it was, then now I knew at this one age I had earlier on, I see I had PTSD when I was way back then, because now, I mean, some of the things I did, one of them was, you know, I pulled out all my eyelashes, and I just like, I know the age at which I probably did that around that, but I just like, that was farther down than this other age at four, and it just doesn't make sense it would be after that, and I just, it didn't seem to still fit in all this, and I'm just like, I don't know, it doesn't make sense, but then after last night, I mean, this is was an older, and I just like, and it's just like, wow. I mean, it's just like, that connects two things there. And it's just, well, that makes sense. And it makes sense when I had, you know, that guy was kind of like outside in our house and trying to get in my window. And now I know why, you know, I always like to close the curtains in my whole life, you know, when it's even before it's dark, I want curtains closed, or why I want lights on. You know, I don't want it to be dark. I don't want it to, I want light. And why? I mean, I was an adult. We had kids and visit at home, and across that front door and that window, I would always hurry across. I never liked it. I never felt comfortable. Mm-hmm. But what would that be about? You know, being stupid, you know, about why would you be scared to go in front of the door? But, you know, but now I know, because he was standing out there, and I mean, just, it's like taking these things and how I feel horrible. And I would wake up in the middle of the night in Visalia, and then some other, some here and some places through the years, and then just feeling inside like I'm this horrible, horrible, horrible person. Can't do anything right. Can't be right. And I just sneak downstairs, grab a pillow, and just sob into it, and just feeling horrible. And I'd never tell Wayne. I would never tell him, because I didn't know why. I just felt like I'm this horrible person, and I couldn't explain anything. And then even now, if I'm thinking, well, if that's why, I mean, it's probably because I displaced my deduction about what was causing it was him. Because what else was there? I didn't know about this trauma that was inside of me 64 years. And so it goes back and explains reasons why I do just like things, opening and shutting curtains or lights, why those things I have done for 64 years. And the reasoning behind it is just like putting things together, how putting this trauma into my life. And it's just like, wow. I mean, it's real, but yet it's also like surreal. And especially last night, like even the more intensity of it. And it's just like, how can your brain, how can your subconscious do this? And, you know, and through the, I think I figured it about 25, 27 years ago. Was when I hadn't thought about this grandpa. I mean, he disowned. He had nothing to do with my family, my mom and dad and my sister. And so at an early age, maybe when I was 12, 10, 11, I don't know, something like that. But that's always been painful. And I hadn't even thought when he died, when I was in high school, freshman. I never thought about him for decades. And then the middle of the night, I thought about him, and I just like, wow, where did that come from? I mean, I thought about it for a couple of days, and then I wouldn't think about it for a while. But then a certain aunt I would have a dream about or feelings about, and this thing about Grandpa, I had a nightmare. I think it's been within this last year or something, and it was just this animal. I was going down a cliff, like in Italy, those big cliffs you drive down and everything, and all of a sudden this animal was just shooting up, and it was just terrifying, and I couldn't understand what it was. And now I look back, and that is Grandpa. I just, like, through the years, I see little glimpses of this trauma has popped up at different times. Yeah. I just, like, just push it away, not knowing what it is, and just forget about it. And then it's just this unrest. Probably over the last couple of years, it's just a building of unrest, unsettledness, and pain. And it just, like, sits inside of you. It's like a volcano bubbling. You know, it's just like, it's just like, you feel like you're going to, it's going to explode, and you're putting stuff on it. And I don't even know what I'm trying to push down. I'm pushing down something that I don't even know that's there, that's coming, trying to come up. And I'm displacing all that responsibility and blame upon the person that's closest to me. And granted, I'm imperfect.
Was that me?
He's imperfect.
Oh, my gosh.
That was me. I'm very passive. I'm an extremely sensitive person. He's more a confident, aggressive type of,
fast.
And which don't make good for well. And then...
it's made for a lovely relationship. And for the most part.
And I see how that... those events at that young age shaped the way I maneuver through life in everything I do, and even in relationships and in the ability to be honest with myself, with others. And I learned that I do what others want me to do and tell me to do without questioning, and be quiet and don't tell, and just, basically live through life like that and don't displease somebody. And my fear has always been, I'm going to get in trouble every day of my life. And if I do something wrong, even if I forget something, whatever it is, it proves to me you're this horrible person. And I've been proven too, and I prove it, and I can prove that every day.
Yeah. So she decided to prove I was a horrible person so she could run away, I guess. It's been amazing to watch this, the book, The Body Keeps the Score, and there's even pains in specific parts of her body, or asthma, that seems to have been related to this trauma. And as God's healing things, it's also having impact in her body. And one of the things they talk about, we use terms like heartbreaking, gut-wrenching. There really are nerves in the stomach and the heart. That's not just a figure of speech. It's really, gut-wrenching is a real thing. And Sarah's memories often begin when a new image is coming or whatever. It starts with a knot in her stomach. And then, you feel it in the heart. And it's just the same way, the bowels of compassion that Jesus, there really is stuff in your gut that happens, good and bad, because there's neurons there. And somebody said it is more neurons in the heart than in the brain, which would, you told me one time a few months ago that there was memory in the heart as well as the brain. Mm-hmm. And you just, okay, science, the things we're talking about with trauma right now, things around that book, science didn't even know 10, 15 years ago. This is all, had come out 20 years ago, we wouldn't have known how to handle it. Probably would have broken our marriage up, and probably, you're just not telling. But, and Sarah, when we've kind of worked her back, just, it's not fair that you have to take this on. And I'm like, are you kidding, man? Yeah, we got married. I brought baggage into this marriage. You have loved me through it. Now we're going to love you through this. And it's not your trauma. It's our trauma. I don't mind up in the middle of the night holding her. I don't mind anything I can do to lighten her load right now as she is dealing with this. But it's amazing already some of the physical effects we see. both that the trauma caused and now they get alleviated as the trauma moves, which in, you know, again, better than us probably, Kyle, but the trauma moves. Most trauma settles in the emotional part of the brain. So it's all, that's why when it happens, when it's triggered, it feels like it's happening to you all over again. And that can be a car accident, a war story. That can be all kinds of trauma, not just sexual trauma.
Yep.
But when it, when it's triggered like that, the prefrontal cortex, or the more reasoned part of the brain, doesn't access the trauma until you do that. And whether it's EMDR or processing it through conversation, whatever. And I look at Sarah really processing in the more rational side of her brain, the things that have really hurt her and been hidden in that other part of her brain, in the more emotional side. And it's an amazing, I mean, it's all in the literature. We read it, we read those books and go, this is huge. This even, you know, she at 4 years old, no ability to handle it. And no adult she could talk to about it. She didn't talk to her parents. Correct. She didn't talk to anybody, no teacher. So it even talks about people that don't end up having a lot of friends, and their closest friends are their dogs. Well, Sarah has said for years her closest friend growing up was her dogs. That she was a bit of an outcast at school, and, you know, she had a speech impediment, and she had some physical maladies that made being in school difficult. So she didn't have close friends, which I knew her in college. Yeah. Sarah had lots of friends when I met her. I've known Sarah to be a great friend to people. But there's this other side of her that doesn't always unpack who she really is with people. She's always pleasing people, like she said, because she doesn't want to get in trouble and doesn't want to make anybody else feel bad. She'd rather feel bad herself. So I'll feel bad and give everybody else a pass. And
it's odd reading books when you feel like they are reading about you.
Writing about you,
yeah. I mean, writing about you, sorry.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I mean, even like that with, you know, like if you don't have a lot of friends, dogs or horses, you know. And I mean, it's just like, oh my God. I mean, it's very confirming, but it's also like surreal. It's like, how do they know that? And it's just like, oh, I'm not this weird, crazy. I mean, it's just, it validates my life and my experiences, I guess. I'm validated. I mean, and it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, it's just like everything, you just like, that's me. And I just like, how do they know me? I mean, and it's, and then it's also, there's reasoning, scientific reasoning why, and that even makes it more confirming. And just to realize that my brain was just so altered. I mean, it was literally physically altered when I was at 4 or 5 in those ages, and to function through life. I mean, it's just, I don't know. And then I just see how, you know, the last 25 years, you know, through the years, there's different layers and different times that this whole thing. And I had I don't even remember. I just know at one point I felt, when I thought about Grandpa, I just felt he's a big player in all of this. But,
but nothing beyond that.
And then that's it. And it's just like, oh, that's stupid. You know, it's just like, what is that? And then just, and then with all this, it just, now it's now taking what I know happened, the whole childhood sexual abuse or assault or whatever you want to call it, and putting that now back into my life and reworking through. It's like that puzzle, putting all those, you know, images together and the pictures and trying to figure out what's true, what's not true. Because I know I've had conversations with you, and it's just like, you asked me, I mean, my big answer was, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's true. I don't know what's not true. I'm what I trusted, what, and how can I trust myself for what I trusted to be true, to be true? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's just having to learn, and it's rethinking, reprocessing everything I have done through my life. Yeah, it's just rewriting it. That's also part of me, even when I'm with anyone, company, or even Wayne or anybody, if someone is around in the house, I will think, what should I be doing, or what shouldn't I be doing? Or if he's sitting out in the patio, is he waiting for me? I mean, I'm never been one at relaxing and being able to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And being down there and no one is around except for the dogs or dog. And so there is no pressure. And even though nobody or even Wayne is not, having pressure at different things around here, even if he was here telling me, internally for me, I feel like I'm thinking about what I should be doing and not just about what I want to do. And down there, that's all there is. And I lay down with the dogs, or I sleep, or sit, we walk, or we eat, or don't eat, or, there's just, that was the first time probably it was a sense where it was an environment where I could be able to make choices without me having to even think about not making choices. Does that make sense?
It does. Is that the first time in your life that you'd lived in a space like that, that you could remember?
From what I can remember, yeah. Because you go from growing up, going to college, having roommates, then we got married. And so then you have kids pretty much.
You even notice that around here, like when I'm in my study working, whatever, Sarah does whatever. But whenever I come down, like for dinner or for the evening, then we've noticed that you're just always with me. And I've told her at times, hey, if you want to go in the garden, if you got other stuff to do, do it. And she goes, no, I like being with you. But I noticed I always had the freedom to say, I'm going to go read, or I'm going to get in the hot tub or whatever. I always had the freedom to move away. I didn't feel like I was bound to her for the entire night, but Sarah felt like just in being attentive and caring, she was always accessible when I wasn't in my study. And we're learning that. We're learning a better way for her to not have to do that.
I was probably unintentionally always aware of what the other person was doing.
Or what they might be thinking. And trying to guess. So instead of just asking, hey, do you want me to sit in the patio with you? She'd just try and figure it out in her head and always err on the side of attending to someone else's needs and not always doing what's effective for her.
Because if somebody got up, then I would think, do I need to get up? I mean, it just was automatic and I didn't know it, but it was always there.
Oh, that's just something I've been unpacking something very similar, Sarah, in my own life and in my own story. And what I've come to, as I've really done and dove in, especially part of going through this process with you, I've dove more into the concept and the idea of fawning. And that's fawning, being this hyper attentiveness of how do I take care of their needs? Yeah. I'm on call. I'm on duty. Anytime their presence is around me, I'm on call. Yeah. I'm on. I have to be there. I have to be present. I have to be hyper vigilant for their needs.
And it's something that it's odd, but not necessarily that I am aware of that I'm doing until now when I was down there and I would see and be up here, where I have, you see where it is there. And it just wasn't relaxed and able to to be relaxed like I was down there at the apartment. Yeah. I mean, it's so much of it is subconscious. It's not conscious. And part of reason I wanted to share it is because, and I know I never wanted to, I was on the last one. I said, that's going to be the last one. And because I've heard podcasts, I've heard, TED Talks, and I've read some things about what from others who have experienced, and knowing the percentages that this happens to, 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 6 boys my therapist said last week, she said there's like 42 million in the United States alone. And
yeah,
how, you know, when I hear some of these stories, there will be one word, you know, the suicidal thoughts, how the suicidal goes to that, you know? Well, I mean, it wasn't connected to Wayne or anything there. It was just, it was all of that that was inside that was driving me to those thoughts. I mean, and just, I mean, there's just one word, you know, somebody in some of these stories I read, and they'll share one word or one thought, and it's just like, that's it. And that puts another of that piece together. Yeah. And it makes sense. It's like my life is, I'm having a clearer picture because I have some memories from childhood, but they're not like a normal or healthy people have a lot of, they'll sit around and talk about their childhood memories. I don't have those.
Yeah.
It was so much on, not just with this sexual abuse, it was just so much other stuff that was along with this. And so,
yeah,
you know, it's, I'm putting, and Father's helping me to put my life together. And I, you know, a lot of it, what I have to do is find out what I want, because a lot of, I have a hard time making decisions. I just, you know, I want to make sure, is it right? If somebody, you know, if I'm going to choose a certain decor, and if somebody doesn't like it, then, oh, that's the wrong choice. You know, it's not, you know, it's not, I don't know the concept of I get to choose.
Hmm. Yeah. And I, just preference.
I'm getting to the concept where, well, is it right or wrong? And my therapist said, no, it's not right or wrong. It's what do you choose? And I don't understand that. I'm learning that.
Yeah.
That I get a choice, even though somebody might not like it, that's okay. It's my choice.
Yeah.
And so that's where everything is. Is it right? Is it wrong? I don't know. And I didn't have thoughts and opinions. I wasn't allowed or had the space in childhood to explore what life is. And so in some respects, I'm like a 4-year-old emotionally in an adult body.
Yeah.
And it's just like, who can do a lot of things, but emotionally, I'm very, not weak. I'm very,
young.
I mean, it's just childish. I mean, I just.
Yeah. But there's another part of you that's, man, every bit of a 60, whatever, year old woman. And you handle life incredibly well. You, joy to be with, fun to know, great learning going on in her heart and life. And so just, it's, but it, this part of her story rewrites everything in a wonderful way, even though it's a horrible beginning. What happened to her is a horror, and how she was so alone so many times with this man just absolutely makes me, there's more anger there. If you want to find anger, I could find some anger there, but again, all those people are dead, long gone. No one even talked to about it.
Yeah.
But man, I tell you, just want you to double your efforts to make sure who you trust your kids to, even if they're a relative.
Yeah. Right?
I try to think about the times we ever let Julie or Andy be alone with another adult, even their grandparents. We were usually around, not because we mistrusted them, but just bad things happen when you're in quiet, dark rooms together. Just bad things happen, so don't do it. Yeah. And it just, it makes me, it's at a loss that it may have been that some of her people knew what was going on and didn't intercede with Sarah or didn't talk, you know, let her talk about it. It was another day. Yeah. And we talked on our previous podcast how much trauma is supported by a lot of our religious thinking about performance and just ignore your feelings and do what's right. You hear all that underneath some of what Sarah's saying. And then particularly as a woman and as a wife in a relationship 60 or 50 years ago, it was very subservient. Just go along, make your husband happy. So all that fits the trauma in Sarah and doesn't allow these women who have been violated and hurt to really be honest with their stories and find the healing that they deserve and need so they can live a productive, joyful, wholehearted life. And Man, that's I think why Sarah said, I want to tell my story. I want other people to hear it. Mm-hmm. And I want people who resonate with it to get the help they need to say, you don't have to live this way.
Yeah. And so I mean, it's just, it's now hard for me to think back and when the initial thing of when I left and everything, because now so much of all this is incorporated that it makes sense. And I mean, there's still a lot of, at least I think of my part in rebuilding, because I'm still having a hard time separating my trauma brain and what I did. Mm-hmm. Apart, separate, that I was a functioning adult and I did what I did. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, and so I, you know, and part of me is just like, I understand if Wayne has to learn to trust me over, and he's not, I mean, he's not having that and he's trusting me. And but for me, I still think I know what I did, mm-hmm. but I know now the suicidal thoughts and all the things that were pushing me to do that wasn't from Wayne. Granted, we're both human and we have things to have to learn. And
she says I screw up occasionally, which I do.
And,
I got no problem with that.
And so that's where you don't know if you don't know all this trauma, for... I mean, it's odd for people to think 64 years you had that, you had no clue, and how that drives you inside. It drove me. I mean, I was busy, and they say you stay busy and you stay mm-hmm. ahead of the trauma, and then when you slow down, it's going to catch up with you.
Yep.
And all those different things. And I mean, it's...
You got 64 years of running in you.
And
a lot of running.
And now it's still, it is exhausting. It's just the whole process. And then it's just, even like, physical stuff, like until now I'm learning to read my body about when, this big knot. I mean, it's like a baseball's in my gut and it's different than just an upset stomach. And I just feel, okay, something is happening. But even it was different like last weekend. There was another memory that was starting to come up and we were out of town and I keep forgetting. I mean, one of those things is of this through thing. I keep forgetting to take pills or and use my inhalers because I'm not having my asthma have a problem. And then I forget to take it. And then last weekend we were out of town and I was just, while I was feeling like I had some breathing problems and I was taking my asthma, and I'm just like, oh, gosh, am I getting sick or something? And remembered something that night. And then the next day I wake up, I'm fine.
Hmm.
I mean, it's just like that. It's just, and other physical things, it's just that are related to this trauma through the years. It's uncanny. That's all I know. I don't know how to describe it, but for people who may be having this and not even knowing why.
The way that the messages that the enemy tries to bring in with the trauma. So for example, like Sarah being a bad person when she was the one being violated. Like she was the one that was being violated and assaulted. And yet the message that came into her heart is you're an evil person or you're a bad person. And just how the enemy twists that, like both the fact that you were being abused and then the enemy was coming in on the backside with messages that it was your fault. You're the bad person. You're the one that's guilty.
Which is really common with sexual abuse victims.
Incredibly
common. Or even battered wives or whatever. Yeah. I did what deserved this. Yeah. I didn't stand up for myself enough. So it's still my fault. Yeah.
And everything that you do wrong proves that.
Yes. It's a reoccurring enforcement for that. Yep. Yeah.
Every day.
It's just been really interesting for me to process through, and just God's been really even doing some work in my life, Sarah, as I've been processing your trauma and going and exploring that, like just how God's been taking me back into my own story. And I even wrote down like the reason why I wasn't able to podcast yesterday was I woke up on Tuesday and I was just angry. There was just rage and anger inside of me. And I didn't know what was going on. And Jess just very graciously was like, Kyle, like the girls have daycare the next couple of days, like go to the cabin, like go into the mountains, go do solitude by yourself. And
this is a good tactic when I'm angry, just tell me to go away.
It was just like, it was very kind. It was a sweet gift that she offered. And one of the things that I've been really wrestling with is why do I sell the story bigger than it is? Like, what is it about my reality that I'm not okay or at peace with? Because there's just been some things that have come up where, like, for me, the either telling like a partial truth, Jess, or over glamortizing an idea or making an idea bigger than it needs to be. And it's like, why do I do that? Am I even aware of it? Jess asked me, are you even aware that you're doing this? Like, is this even something that's on your radar? And I think it's back to that dissociative fawning. I think it's a residual piece of that trauma I'm processing this with you. I'm taking notes as we were talking, like God's giving me clarity after I got back from the trip last night, you know? And so I don't know what he's going to do with that. I don't know what that's going to look like, but that, you know, it's just been very good for me as I going through this and just several different things that have come up in the journey that I've been able to start to unpack for myself as well. You know, it's been intriguing. I remember like, I'm really thankful because I didn't, when you called me, Wayne, and then when you were like, gave me the invitation to come out, I was like, okay, Lord, how do I initiate my prayer team without betraying Wayne and Sarah, like their confidence? But I'm panicking internally because I like, Lord, I don't have what it takes to walk through this with them. Like, I have no idea what, and they, like literally at that time, as I was praying that, Harvey called me. And he's like, hey, man, you're just on my heart. Like, I wanted to pray for you, brother. And I was like, dude, Harvey, I need you to pray for me because I'm going out to spend some time with Wayne and Sarah. And I knew that he knew, like, and I didn't go into detail, but I knew that he knew what was kind of going on. And so I was like, man, I feel so unequipped to do this. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And these, like, I mean, I do, but like to walk with my two dear friends through this, you know, and it was just like, Lord, like you better show up and step up because I don't know what's going to happen, you know? And so that was, so Mike and Harvey were the two primary prayer warriors that I had covering me as I came out to spend time with you guys. But it's been an interesting process and journey for me just to work through, you know, I think that's the beauty of God's healing process too, Sarah, is like, you know, I love the statement about the third person in the marriage and the externalization of the trauma. Like I've owned a degree of that. And yet I think I just need to call it out for what it is and be like, okay, this isn't who I am, but it's still in our marriage. And I need to deal with it. Jess and I need to work through that. Like Jess is safe and just trusting that. So I feel like she and I, in some regards, are teasing out what you and Wayne are going through just in my own life. And God's just doing more of that healing work and going into another layer of that.
Sarah's trauma not only took a toll on her life, but also on our relationship. So how does a relationship come back from such pain and betrayal and find a love deeper than it knew before? Next time on The God Journey.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.